CBS and the world, I'm John Batchelor. Latin America, the new world, Venezuela, the threat. Venezuela, a country ripped apart by politics and now crushed by an economic collapse conjoined with the pandemic that damages everyone's economy. Venezuela is no longer a single actor. You will recall in conversations with my colleague Joseph Umar and our colleague Senator Cabal of Colombia that we've learned this last year or more that Venezuela is in league with bad actors from across the planet. I'm thinking of Moscow. I'm thinking of Tehran. I'm certainly thinking of Cuba. There's always the Chinese element as well, because the investor class in China eager to exploit Venezuela's weakness. Now we have Venezuela challenged by the United States, and the challengers are themselves exhausted or being turned away for other needs. The headline is this: in a new blow to Venezuelan opposition, major leader quits interim government. Dateline Caracas, Julio Borges, who serves as foreign minister for Venezuela's U.S.-backed interim government, said in these last days he would leave his post, further weakening the opposition just weeks after it was routed in regional elections. Joseph, how to interpret this? Because the Honorable Guaido was the man I learned to say was the president of Venezuela because he was the leader of the parliament. However, since those parliamentary elections, that is no longer the case. So is the opposition no longer with leadership?
So the opposition in Venezuela is certainly fractured. And essentially, when the coalition was built in the National Assembly and the Venezuelan legislature to support President Guaido as the interim president of the country per their constitution, it was a coalition of four political parties in Venezuela, opposition political parties to the Maduro regime. Of those four political parties, which are known as the G4 or the G4 in Spanish, one of the more prominent ones was one called Primera Justicia, or First Justice would be the translation in English. Julio Borges is part of that political party. Juan Guaido was part of another political party called Voluntad Popular. So essentially, in another scenario, they would be competing politicians from different political parties. But they united in the sense of trying to find a way to get out of the grip of the Maduro regime and to look for a transition in the country. I think since that failed, that effort failed, which began in January 2019, which is when President Guaido became known as the interim president of Venezuela. Since that effort was not successful and the Maduro regime is back, it's still in power. And they had these legislative elections where the Venezuelan opposition was diminished even further. Then you're starting to see the fractures. And Julio Borges, who was at the time during the interim presidency of Juan Guaido, considered to be the essentially like the foreign minister of Guaido, and he was the one that handled a lot of the international relations, particularly with the European Union and here and we're here in Washington D.C. And other allies throughout the region. He is kind of going back to his political party, which is Primera Justicia. But I think the larger message here, John, is that we're going to come up on January, and in January, I think we're really going to start to see the Venezuelan opposition kind of go in different directions. Now, this can present an opportunity for a new opposition to coalesce that has much more coherence in terms of the way that they want to move Venezuela forward to find a way to get out of the Maduro regime. Or you could just find a bunch of fragments that are going to be weak and pretty much ineffective and probably irrelevant, and Venezuela will be lost, much like Cuba was many decades ago.
The quote from Mr. Borges, who lives in Bogota, itself a significant fact. The quote from Mr. Borges: the interim government makes sense as an instrument to get out of the dictatorship. But at this moment, in our way of seeing it, the interim government has been damaged. He goes on to say, instead of being an instrument to fight the dictatorship, the interim government has become a kind of caste. That is not a good direction, Joe. What that means is the interim government, those in exile from Caracas, are settling into a permanent life outside of Venezuela. They're turning away. We saw this in the 20th century, often in Europe, when governments would be exiled. At first, there's great fever to regain justice for the people. But then as they settle into their new lives in Paris or London or other capitals where they have sympathy, they no longer represent the people in the country. Is that happening to Venezuelans?
Unfortunately, it is happening, John. And I think what we're seeing here now is pretty much the opposition's running out of ideas on how to deal with the Maduro regime. And I can't necessarily fault them, because the Maduro regime is one of the most hardened regimes in the Western Hemisphere, one of the most hardened in the world. And they have big powers that are backing them up, such as Russia, China, Iran. So, you know, to see it in a challenge with a political opposition inside the country, it's really an asymmetric challenge. There's really there's not equal strength on both sides. But I think, John, what the bigger picture here is the interim presidency of Juan Guaido, I think it will survive as long as the United States continues to recognize it. And let's be very honest, John, the reason that the interim presidency of Juan Guaido was somewhat successful at convincing the rest of the Western world that they are the constitutional and legitimate government inside Venezuela and to not recognize Nicolas Maduro was because the United States gave them that backing and helped project their image and help gather support internationally. So as long as the White House and specifically the Biden administration supports President Guaido, I think they'll be okay, at least in terms of having some aura of legitimacy. But that's the question. What is the Biden administration going to do with Venezuela? They haven't articulated a Venezuela strategy. They haven't spoken very much publicly about President Guaido and the challenges that have to remain. And remember, Julio Borges was the foreign minister of Guaido. So he was his first point of contact beyond their ambassador here in Washington, Carlos Vecchio. But he was their main point of contact with the United States. So if Borges fractures and leaves Guaido, which has already happened, it's evident, not made public, then potentially are we going to see Washington back up Julio Borges? Or how is this going to look? And I think this is also putting the Biden administration in a position where they're going to have to figure out what part of the Venezuelan opposition are they supporting? Are they trying to coalesce them? Or are they just, you know, forgetting about Venezuela?
It's surprising to me, because I'm reading and getting ready to speak to the professor Serhii Blochi, whose new book is about the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962, how Venezuela is falling into a pattern that is not dissimilar from what happened in Cuba in the 1960s after Mr. Castro decided to turn to the Soviet Union as a sponsor. In other words, there is opposition, there's great excitement. And in Cuba's case, there was even an invasion force from Florida trained by the CIA. That failed at the Bay of Pigs. And then the crisis atmosphere of the Cuban Missile Crisis settling everyone into their spheres. And those spheres have existed now for 60 years. Russia continues to support Cuba, and other actors support Cuba. The U.S. continues to resent and object and oppose Cuba, no matter that the Castros are gone. And there is no bridge. There is no way of solving this. Is that a future for Venezuela 60 years from now, Joseph?
Well, we hope not. But certainly, you're right. Venezuela is moving in the direction of a Cuba in the sense that you have a authoritarian, totalitarian regime that's becoming entrenched inside the country, that they're using elections just as a sham to be able to perpetuate themselves into power. And you have an opposition that's basically becoming comfortable with the idea that they're not going to ever be back in control of their country, and they're pretty much going to be exiled, most of them operating from outside Venezuela. So in that sense, it's 100% resembling the Cuba situation, and hopefully it doesn't continue that way. But I think there is a little bit of a difference here as well, in the sense that the Maduro regime is very active and not just capturing Venezuela. They've already captured Venezuela. Is it looking at destabilizing the rest of Latin America? Now, the Cubans tried this as well, but arguably they weren't able to do it until the Venezuelans joined up with them. And when I say the Venezuelans, not the people, obviously I'm talking about the regime of Hugo Chavez and now Nicolas Maduro. And then they've also now captured other countries in Nicaragua and Bolivia. And that alliance is destabilizing all of Latin America. And I think that's the difference between the period of the Cold War. And the Cold War was just Cuba and the Soviet Union and doing little proxy battles with guerrilla warfare throughout Latin America. Now we're having more asymmetric warfare that involves politics, economics, and obviously irregular actors. And they're looking at doing this all throughout Latin America. And so the Maduro regime is on an offensive, and that offensive doesn't stop at the Venezuelan border. And I think it's right now targeting Colombia most immediately.
I note there's disillusionment elsewhere in Latin America Just briefly, Joseph, the headlines from Reuters caught my attention because of our conversation about the U.S. decision to decide that FARC, the revolutionary command that had been terrorists plaguing Colombia and other parts of Latin America these last decades, FARC is no longer regarded as a terrorist organization by the State Department. And then this headline, Colombia ex-rebels grow disillusioned with FARC party 5 years after peace. Is there trouble in the veteran FARCs, Joseph, the veteran FARC part? And I know there's trouble here in the U.S. with the decision by the Biden administration.
Well, yeah, for sure. There's been fractures within the FARC before, and there's fractures today. Since the peace deal of 2016, there have been factions of the FARC that never agreed with the peace deal from the beginning, and they opposed the signing of the peace deal by FARC leaders at the time. And they are now still active in all kinds of illicit activities, including drug trafficking and gold smuggling and other things. And then the former peace negotiators, particularly Ivan Marquez, who was in Havana, he signed the peace deal. They became disillusioned after they signed it. And then they say that they're not honoring the peace deal either. And they blame the Duque government for not following through. And it kind of all dismantled. And they're fighting each other as well within the FARC. So there are all these different factions. But I think we have to also have a perspective of the FARC as an irregular actor that has a very close relationship with the Maduro regime in Venezuela. And Venezuela's Maduro regime, they may not work with all the FARC factions, but they work with some of the major FARC factions and actually benefit from the FARC infighting that's happening along the border. You know, we've talked about this before when I went to visit the Colombia-Venezuela border, and that infighting that you have between different FARC factions along the border, which a lot of analysts attribute to kind of just the battle for cross-border illicit trade. That's true, but it benefits the Maduro regime because it weakens the border. It places the Colombian military on a defensive, and it allows the Maduro regime to then use disinformation and propaganda to say that he's going to sit down with his Colombian counterpart, in this case, President Iván Duque, to try to resolve his border issues that he's also helping create. So I think there's strategic elements to this that about the FARC fracturing of different FARC factions. But I think that delisting them as an organization is going to benefit all the factions because in essence, and this perhaps is not the intent of that policy, but the effect is likely going to be the legitimization of the FARC in general. So all the factions are going to be able to manipulate the message toward their benefit.
Speaking with Joseph Umar, Executive Director of Secure Free Society, there is one pending election of major significance in Latin America, in the New World, Chile, when we come back. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.